If you're a Disney Plus subscriber and you're watching The Mandalorian, Jack and I have a podcast for you.
Every week, we'll discuss the latest episode of The Mandalorian and talk about other great content and maybe some not so great content on Disney Plus as well.
As two lifelong Star Wars fans, we have a ton of fun geeking out over all the little details of the show, and we want you to join us every Monday.
So search for Disney Plus Reviews. That's Disney P-L-U-S Reviews. Hey, Phil, how about that Baby Yoda? Baby Yoda says, what's a podcast?
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that's all about waiting, and then something happens. It's SifPod. Welcome to Sif Pop Weekly, streaming live most Saturday mornings or available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
USA! USA!
I'm your host.
Susan's not going to get that reference.
No, she hasn't seen that movie. I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and just because I'm his elder doesn't mean he hasn't taught me a few things. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Ahoy.
Each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. She's a mystery, and I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It's Susan Kamyab Stevens.
Thanks for having me.
It is so good to have you back, Susan. We are, how are things? How have things been? It's been a hot second since we've had you on the show.
Yeah, it's been good. Surprisingly, even with the pandemic calmed down and then it came back, but movies are still happening. So it's been nice that we can still see stuff. It was nice to watch the Marvel films in theaters. I did do that. We watched Black Widow and Shang-Chi. Yeah.
How'd you feel about Shang-Chi since we're talking about
it?
Yeah.
I did too. I liked it a lot. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, it's growing on me too. I really want to see it again. I'm excited.
Loved it.
Yeah, and I already really, really loved it. I think they announced a pretty short window before it's going to be on Disney Plus. So I'm excited to be able to check it out more here pretty soon. But yeah, it is absolutely great to have you back. Susan is in Dallas, Texas area, where you are a movie critic. Where can people find you? Like if they kind of want to find some of your stuff. I forget the channel you're on. I don't have it written down this time. So.
Oh, that's all right. I mean, the easiest way is honestly just go to thischicksflix.com. That's my website, and I post all my reviews and interviews there. But also ICTN.TV, that's the station I work for. It's based out of Irving, Texas. So there's that. Or I always say people can just Google me, but I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all of that too.
Nice. Well, we're excited to talk with you about a couple movies. We already kind of hinted at you haven't seen one of them, The Card Counter. You did not get a chance to see The Card Counter.
I do want to see it.
Yeah. So Andrew and I will have that conversation. You are invited to be part of that conversation because a lot of times when we have somebody on who hasn't seen one of the movies, they can kind of ask questions that the audience might be asking, that might want to know. So you can certainly do that. But then we're also going to talk about the movie Kate, which you did see on Netflix. So we're going to talk about those two, and then we're going to do our best ever challenge on best ever movies featuring gambling, best ever gambling movies. And then, of course, a buried treasure and all the fun we have along the way. No reason to wait for it. Let's get into it. Let's talk a little bit about Kate.
Kate, what happened to you?
I missed. I think I was poisoned before the hit. V, who was the target?
Grand honcho of the Yakuza.
How much time do I have?
14 hours, maybe 15.
Kate, it's gonna be okay.
You won't get any more questions from me after today.
After she's irreversibly poisoned, a ruthless criminal operative has less than 24 hours to exact revenge on her enemies, and in the process forms an unexpected bond with the daughter of one of her past victims. This is Mary Elizabeth Winstead kind of being the central role as Kate, and Woody Harrelson joining as the mentor in this movie. This is falling into what is becoming a very long line of female-led action movies this year. I was just thinking of how many we're seeing, which I love. What did you guys think? Did you love this movie, like it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Susan, let's go to you first.
I hated it.
All right.
Yeah.
I love the passion. Let's get it.
One of the worst movies I've seen this year. It was so bad. I honestly, it was a struggle to get through. And I'm glad we're talking about it today because it is going to be just flushed out of my mind in the next couple of weeks. Like, it's nothing about this is memorable. I love Mary Elizabeth Winstead, but my God, what a poor choice. Like, Woody Harrelson, like, what did they pay you for this? Like, it was so bad.
All right. I love the passion. firmly in the hated it camp. Andrew, what about you? Like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
Well, coming from that, I think my just okay thing, this is going to seem like a glowing recommendation. You
know? Right?
I thought it was just okay.
Wow.
I am on.
It wasn't great. It wasn't bad for me though.
Okay. Well, we'll get into it. I land firmly in the disliked it category. Maybe even high side of disliked it. And by our standards, that means closer to it was just okay. So yeah. I almost want, usually we start with whoever liked it the most, which in this case seems to be Andrew, but I kind of want to start with the passion. No. So yeah. Let's tear it apart, Susan. Like, go into it. What are some of the things you hated about this movie?
I thought there was absolutely like it jumps right in, which I have nothing with it. No, nothing's wrong with jumping right into it, but it jumps so quickly into this, whatever, the death, and then diving right into her getting poisoned, that I didn't care about any of the characters. I was like, what's this relationship with you and Woody Harrelson? What's this that I get it? You feel bad for killing this girl's father. And it just felt like none of the relationships made sense to me. Like, I just didn't care. They made sense, but I just didn't care about them. And I really could not stand the relationship between Mary Elizabeth Winstead and the girl that she kidnapped. I honestly, I've always had a big pet peeve about the, when someone gets kidnapped and then the person that got kidnapped starts to be like, oh, you're so awesome. You're either they fall in love with that person or they become buddies.
I'm just Stockholm like, syndrome.
Yeah. The Stockholm syndrome. Yeah. I hate that.
Unbeknownst, Stockholm syndrome.
You kidnap me. I hate you. Like, I don't think you're cool. And she thinks there's one line where she's like, oh, you're so pretty and like awesome. And I was like, how are you admiring her right now? Like, get the hell away. I just wouldn't trust anybody. It was really cheesy. And I just didn't care about any of the characters at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear absolutely what you're saying. I think the movie is trying to do something with that relationship. In fact, I think that relationship is supposed to be our central connecting point to the message and themes of the movies of the movie, which to me seems to be about breaking the circle. You know, this idea that there is being used in abuse and being a tool of, I think the movie is saying the patriarchy, you know, this idea that they're, that these women are being used as tools to their, you know, to benefit them, is definitely what the movie is trying to get at. And so that relationship is supposed to be more of a, don't be like me, you know, kind of thing, where the movie is saying, okay, someone's got to break the circle, and will the circle be broken? So that's what the movie's trying to do, but you're absolutely right in that the connections are so thin, and we're never given any like real reason to believe in these connections, that all of that stuff kind of falls flat. So yeah, I definitely hear what you're saying. Andrew, what are some thoughts from you?
Well, the first time I saw Gunpowder Milkshake was, oh wait, no, wrong movie. well, I'll say this. I like Gunpowder Milkshake so much more than this movie. And it's the same movie pretty much, you know, the young heroine taking a young victim's daughter under her wing and not telling them the truth. I'm like, this is the exact same thing as Gunpowder Milkshake. This movie, if I had to give it any pros, is the environment, the Tokyo nighttime, you know, the lights and everything. It's beautiful to look at. There's one scene that I know what they were trying to do, but it didn't work yet was still pretty was the car chase with like all the swirling lights. It looked like they were trying to do something like out of like a hyper realistic anime or something like that or something, but it didn't mesh at all with the rest of the movie. But yeah, there are parts of it like, or there's a part where they go to a like this sake dojo with like everything's all white and stuff. I'm like, oh, everything. As soon as I saw that place and I saw how it was all white, I'm like, oh yeah, there's gonna be a lot of blood splatter in here just to contrast all the white. Like I knew how they were setting everything up, and they did that throughout the rest of the movie. Like the environments were perfectly suited for whatever stylization of like combat was about to ensue. So yeah. Predictability was through the roof. Originality was none, but it was fun to look at.
Predictability.
So that's why I'm going with just okay.
Predictability was through the roof. Originality was through the basement. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's true.
100% agree. I'm going to throw a pro out there. I think Mary Elizabeth Winstead is amazing. And I think
I can agree with that.
I think she does her best to drag this movie along. I think she's good at the action stuff. I think she's definitely good at the acting stuff. I loved her in Birds of Prey as well. I wanted more of her there.
Yeah.
I think she's an incredible actor, and I'm excited to see what she does next. She cannot, by her own strength, make this movie good, but she does attempt to do it well. So I do think Mary Elizabeth Winstead is amazing in this. Can we call her Mew? M-E-W, Mew? Mew, Mew, Mew.
She makes the movie tolerable.
Yeah.
That's probably the best.
Mew, Mew brings the pew, pew. That's should have been the tagline for this movie.
Yeah. I got a weird question, because while I was watching this, were there scenes where they were trying to make her look Japanese or like, it seemed like there were scenes where I was like, okay, yeah, they dyed her hair jet black, and like they like, I don't know if it was just the makeup or something, like, but it just didn't look like, it looked like they were trying to, you know, make her blend in with like the Japanese people. And I didn't know if it was just a coincidental thing or if it was like an intentional thing. And it may just be something that I put in my own head. I don't know.
Yeah, I will tell you, I didn't pick up on that at all.
Me neither.
Okay.
But it certainly can be a transfer thing that happens just with the environment. You know, your brain kind of locks those things in. But I did not pick up on the movie doing that at all. What you mentioned, the, you know, kind of the Tokyo setting being beautiful, and I agree with that. But it's beautiful in the same way, just like watching a 4K video of Tokyo on YouTube is beautiful. Like, it wasn't like, like a creative kind of thing. In the same way that I love some of the music in this. Some of the Japanese pop music that they play in this is really fun, but it would also be fun on a Spotify playlist. It doesn't, like, serve the movie in, like, any real kind of way. So, so
it just reminded me of a video game most of the time.
Yeah, yeah. We can talk about, speaking of video game, I mean, you talk about the action, it's fine, it's not shot terribly, it's not, you know, it's not overcut to death, but I'm bored. I'm just kind of bored with this shoot 'em up, what kind of blood can you splatter, where can you stick the sword through, like, it just seems like we've seen it so much recently. It's kind of the John Wickification of movies right now, and I get it, but there's an originality to those John Wick movies with some of the ways they do the action that some of these movies that are trying to be that don't quite get to. And it's not a gender thing, because honestly, Charlize does, like, some of the Charlize movies Atomic Blonde is incredible. Yeah. Like, Atomic Blonde really gets some of that stuff. But it's weird to see even Gunpowder Milkshake, like, all these movies trying to do this this vengeance kind of story, and it's not like it's a new thing. It's been in cinema for a long time. You know, it's been in cinema long enough that Kill Bill. What's that?
It reminds me of Crank. You know the hero's gonna die, because, you know, like, there's a ticking clock on their life and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So the entire movie is about extending that timeline in order for them to get revenge.
Yeah, I was just saying. Yeah. The vengeance cinema thing has been around long enough that when Quentin made Kill Bill.
Yeah.
You know, he was bringing back something from, you know, way back in his past. You know, it's definitely been with us for a long time. I'm not saying it's new. Yeah. I'm just saying we're kind of seeing a lot of it right now. And if it's not going to be original, it's just going to be boring to me.
Same. That's the only, I mean, honestly, when John Wick did it, I would have guessed that that would have been boring. But right out the bat, you care about John Wick and you care when that dog dies and you want him to kill every single person.
Yeah. I mean, there's no better way to get somebody on your side than puppy death.
Yeah. You know?
That's what this
it'll
movie
do, it'll do it every time.
That's the review of this movie from Andrew. Needed more puppy death.
Needed more puppy death to drive the story.
They'll put that on the poster.
And then you got to put Susan's, you know, title underneath.
Right. Yes. That'll be Susan's pull quote for this movie. Yeah. It'll be needed more puppy death. Susan Kamyab Stevens. anything else you guys want to talk about this movie before we kind of move on? I mean, there's plenty of other things we could say, but it really all does come down to a derivativeness that this movie has story wise. The theme and message is decent. Obviously, it's something, you know, that can resonate, but the movie doesn't
get kill.
I don't think that's it. This movie is pretty pro vengeance, it appears, but at the same time, the movie doesn't give it a chance to really resonate in any way that it should. Woody Harrelson is just cashing a paycheck here. He's fine. Oh. He's not, you know.
Yeah.
He's barely making an effort in this film. Are you kidding me? Yeah. The guy is like, yeah, sure. You want my name. He's the biggest name in the film. Mm-hmm. So he's like, sure. And oh my God, what so predictable. I mean, come on, his character right off.
Really
like you said, it was,
yeah. Very derivative.
I want to broaden with this question because as we know that Netflix is dropping a new movie every single week. Mm-hmm. Are we seeing more quality are we seeing more quantity over quality here?
Sure.
With like the scape of Netflix this year in particular?
Well, there's a reason South Park made the joke, you know, when Netflix answers the phone, they answer it, you're Netflix, greenlit. because their strategy has always been to throw spaghetti at the wall. That has always been Netflix's digital strategy. So. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it makes sense because they realize they can put crappy films and they do well, like that Princess, whatever that did so well, that Princess Christmas Princess. What, you know what I mean? And they got three movies after that. Like, people never thought that movie would have been super. Mm-hmm. And then there was that like that weird sex movie, that 300 something days, whatever, where he like kidnapped the girl to make her fall in love with him. Terrible films, both bad movies, but they became like number one on Netflix. Mm-hmm. So it just shows that if it's just available to you, I mean, people are probably going to watch Kate. Well, because why not?
Yeah. Yeah. I think overall, you're not going to hear a recommend from any of us on this one. I mean, even though you probably
there are plenty
already
of movies like this, but better.
Yeah. And even though you already have Netflix, there's no reason for you to fire this one up, you know, fire up something else instead. I think it'll be more. It'll be more fun. It'll be more edifying. It'll be a better experience. So no need to worry about Kate. There you go. Let's move on to the card counter.
All in.
You count cards, right?
I'm not that smart.
But you win. You need someone to stake you.
That's what you do. You run a stable.
I'm always looking for a good thoroughbred.
Having been sentenced to 10 years in prison, I learned to count cards.
How'd you do that?
Poker's all about waiting.
Check, raise, re-raise, call.
Then something happens.
You remember it?
This is where all the good stuff happens.
William Tell wants to play cards. His Spartan existence on the casino trail is shattered when he is approached by Kirk, a vulnerable and angry young man seeking help to execute his plan for revenge on a military colonel. Tell sees a chance at redemption through his relationship with Kirk, but keeping Kirk on the straight and narrow proves impossible, dragging Tell back into the darkness of his past. Card Counter stars Oscar Isaac, Tiffany Haddish, and Ty Sheridan, with a performance by Willem Dafoe in there as well. It's brought to us by Paul Schrader, whose most recent film gathered a lot of buzz, and the title just slipped my brain.
You're talking about the Ethan Hawke movie?
Yeah. I had it right there, and then it flew. You ever have something just fly out of your brain? It's amazing.
First Reformed.
Thank you. Yeah, First Reformed. Yeah. His most recent film, First Reformed.
Ethan Hawke carries that movie, and he's the only reason why that movie is good.
I have some good things to say about First Reformed beyond the Ethan Hawke performance, but that is not the movie we're reviewing right now. Yeah. We're talking about The Card Counter. What did you think, Andrew Wood? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
I'm really close to hating it, but I'm going to go with I really didn't like it.
Wow. Oh, that is unfortunate. I was really hoping you liked this movie because I am firmly in the hated it category. I had a terrible experience with this movie.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's like 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. Like,
yeah, that's what I'm
is it really?
Yeah, we are definitely in the critical minority on this one. Now, people audience, we may be in the audience majority on this one. The audience score is not good, but the critical score is very good. And I think this is one of those disconnect movies where critics find stuff that they fixate on to like and don't really think about the experience of watching a movie like this. And that is what I think is happening here, but that's from my perspective. So yeah, I'm firmly in the hated it camp on this one.
I'm really close. Probably by the end of this conversation, I'll find
I was really hoping you liked it because I wanted somebody on here to tell me how I'm wrong.
Antagonistic.
No, because obviously a lot of critics love this movie, and so I was really hoping to figure out what it is that they love. But anyhow, Andrew, I'm going to let you start. What do you want to talk about first, since we both really didn't like it?
This movie doesn't know what it wants to be.
Right.
It doesn't know if it wants to be a gambling movie. It doesn't know if it wants to be a taking somebody under your wing movie. It doesn't know if it wants to be a redemption arc movie. It tries to do so many things, but it doesn't have a conclusive, foundation for any of them. To which point, half of this movie is him explaining the different variations of gambling, like blackjack and like poker and roulette, and like he's explaining the rules to all these games, and I find myself going, but is that what this movie's about? Because we're introduced to this antagonistic Willem Dafoe character. Is he going to be the driving force? Is because what he's talking about has nothing to do with what I think the Ty Sheridan character wants to do or anything like that, to where I don't know what this movie wants to be.
I think that's a very valid point. If I had to render a guess, I think the movie wants to be about redemption. I think Paul Schrader is trying to tell a story, as he often does, about the complexities and nuances of what it means to do the right thing and what is the right thing. I think that's what he's going for here. I think he completely fails, and this is from somebody who, again, will defend First Reformed in many ways. I thought that movie was doing some interesting things. I don't think this movie is doing anything interesting. I'm going to start here. The poker in this movie is terrible. Terrible. If you're any kind of, if you know more than most people about poker, you don't even have to be an expert, but if you know more than most, it's going to ring so false. So much of the tournament stuff rings false. So much of the way people are playing poker rings false. They show specific hands as if they understand what's going on. And then people make stupid, stupid decisions, which I'm not saying there aren't stupid poker players, but at this level and in a movie that's trying to tell you something, the poker is terrible in this movie. There's a moment where he explains his favorite poker hand that he's ever seen, right?
It's the most mundane average poker hand I've ever heard of.
Well, nothing happens in that hand other than cards come. There's nothing about that hand that's it's one of those things where he's telling a bad beat story, which we've all heard a million bad beat stories, and that just means that a card comes that changes things. Well, that's just a card coming out of a deck. What's interesting about that? The stories that real poker players would tell are about great laydowns or strategy and a bet size that was particularly impressive that did a certain thing, not just a card came that gave somebody a straight flush. Who cares? That's just,
I mean, that's happened to us, you and me. You have beaten me and I have beaten you on a on a river card, you know? It's
so anyways,
there's nothing special there.
I say that to say I will fully admit that the poker is so terrible in this movie that that may be part of what I'm holding against the rest of the movie, and that I found everything else inauthentic too because I found the poker so inauthentic. That could be possible. It could be the same thing as, like, Andrew, is it you that talks about, you know, somebody watching ER as a nurse and being like, you know, nothing in this. Is that you? Is that your story?
Well, I wasn't a nurse, but, you know, like, I've working in a hospital for like almost like 8 years. Like, I can watch House or ER or any of those shows, and I know that there is a level of entertainment value. Like, the big thing that we always make fun of was defibrillators. You know how defibrillators are never, ever used in TV shows the way, like, if somebody flatlines, you don't use a defibrillator to bring them back. That's not what it's for. You know, it's to, if their heart rhythm is out of sync, it's to, you know, shock it back into rhythm. That's what it's for.
Yeah.
But so, like, whenever you see that, you're like, yeah. So, but this is in a different level of ignorance and trying to sound smarter than it really is. And that's not just for the poker. I think this entire movie thinks it's smarter than it really is.
I think so. I had that same feeling. Yeah. I think you think you're being brilliant here, but it none of it holds together. The other thing is I didn't buy any of the characters. I didn't buy any of the relationships. Oscar Isaac is doing his best, but I didn't buy that character. I didn't understand what was motivating him, where he was. I didn't buy him and Tiffany Haddish together at all.
Her performance is atrocious. She is
really
bad.
It's really bad.
Atrociously
bad. And I love Tiffany Haddish.
I do too.
That's really sad.
It's sad because it's a combination of her acting is bad and her dialogue is bad. And when you put those two together, it just comes off as so bad.
Well,
her performance, like her mannerisms and her facial expressions, don't match what the dialogue is trying to portray. Like, you can tell, because it's pretty basic dialogue, what, you know, the dialogue, the emotion is trying to emote from the actor. And she doesn't deliver on that. And it's cheesy dialogue. And it's just really bad.
I really don't blame her. I watched some of this movie and had the thought of, how is this the take you chose to put in this movie? You have to have a better take than this. I really think a lot of this falls on Schrader. I think he wanted this kind of down kind of thing, and he did not play to her strengths. And I think she could be amazing in dramatic roles. I really do.
Yeah.
We've seen way too many comedians who are energetic, and like Robin Williams comes to mind. I have no doubt she could pull a Robin Williams and do a Good Will Hunting. Like, I have no doubt Tiffany Haddish could do that. I just don't think Schrader knew how to use her.
I'm just saying this movie is not.
And what I'm saying is you can put some of the blame on her, but I put just as much on the director, the writer. You know, there are so many things that go into the performance you see on screen. But I agree with you. I didn't buy that performance. I didn't buy them together. Ty Sheridan maybe had the best performance in the movie for me, but
he doesn't do anything.
He doesn't do anything.
Even, really? He's not anything in the movie?
Well, he's
well, his character is a nothing character.
Oh.
There's not a lot of understandable progress to the character arc of that character. So the movie tries to do something towards the end that I won't give away. And there's nothing shown to us that makes me understand why this character did this, why it changed. Or didn't change, or whatever the case may be. So, I really, really had a hard time buying into a lot of this, which made the idea of redemption a hard one to really buy into, because I didn't understand the movie's, I didn't understand the movie's moral center. I don't understand what the movie's perspective is. So I can't compare my own moral perspective to the moral perspective of this movie, because I don't think the movie communicates what it believes is right or wrong in any kind of meaningful way. So
I think what this movie is, and just to kind of give a general like idea of what's going on, it's like Willem Dafoe in this movie is a wolf in sheep's clothing. And so is Oscar Isaac, but he's mad at Willem Dafoe because Oscar Isaac was the wolf in sheep's clothing that got caught. And I'm like, you're still bad. Like, you're not my hero in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, your overall, like, revenge arc is not something that I'm really on board for, because you're not, like, the person I want to root for. It's, and all of this while at the same time trying to be a poker movie.
Except it's not. It's not trying to be a poker movie at all. It makes that clear.
Okay, it spends too much time on poker for it not to try to be a poker movie.
Well, that's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it is mind-boggling the amount of explanation and exposition we get about poker and other gambling things for how they treat that storyline in the last 20 minutes. Like, it's like mind-blowing what they do with that setup, which is absolutely nothing. So yeah, man, go watch.
Are you gonna go and see it today?
Something else.
I'm just like seriously so shocked, because I fully expect, after seeing the Rotten Tomatoes score, and it's funny because when my husband and I watched the trailer, the first thing I thought was like, ooh, I don't know if this is gonna be good. Cause you know, she's got that, I just saw it in the clip that they're doing that ET moment there with their little fingers.
I wouldn't usually do this, but that is the last shot of the movie, and
it goes on for at least three minutes.
It feels like 3 minutes. I'm sure it's like 30 seconds, but it feels like
it's long.
What are you trying to make me feel right now?
What is the ending of what was that, Cherry with Tom Holland?
Yeah.
Like that was like one of the worst endings in film last year. But I was like, ooh, I did not think this was going to be good. So when I couldn't make the screening, I was like, it's probably whatever. It looks bad anyways. And then I saw all this like high praise, and I thought for sure I was about to come in here and you guys were just going to say this is one of the best gambling movies ever. Wow. And now I understand why you thought Kate was just okay, because this sounds worse than Kate to you guys.
Oh, man, I would watch Kate every day over this.
Maybe but, if I saw Card Counter, I would have thought Kate was okay.
Yeah. Maybe that's
I don't know.
It.
I hope you like it. I always wish for the best. I really hope you find something in it that we didn't, and let me know. But because I hate the feeling that I would give perspective to someone that would change their ability to enjoy something. If you have the ability to enjoy it, enjoy it. That makes me happy.
I agree. With our job, I always say if I hated a movie and someone's like, I liked it, I'm like, well, good. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah.
But this is what, you know, I always say, don't judge a movie by its trailer, but that was already like my thought. Mm,
so sorry I'm to probably, confirm if, some of that if, stuff.
With what I saw in the trailer, I think I might lean with you guys. I will watch it still. I will also say,
probably
get a DVD.
I had two couples in my screening walk out about halfway through.
Oh, wow.
They were so bored. That's my interpretation, but it was just like, there's nothing going on here. There's nothing holding my interest, and they just left.
How long is it?
Yeah. About two.
I mean, it felt over 2 hours, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was 90 minutes. And it just felt that way.
It is hour 50.
Yeah.
So close to two.
Yeah, yeah. About the hour mark, one of them left, and the other left about a little after that, if I'm guessing
and
correctly.
But what was the point, Aaron? And this is kind of getting into specifics, but what was the point of that? It wasn't walleye vision. It was like, looking at 3D, you know, have you ever watched like a 3D movie without the glasses and it's like split down the middle, you know?
Yeah.
Like there's several shots in this movie, but okay, go ahead, Aaron.
We are trending towards SIF spoil here, but I really don't want to talk about this movie more. So like, I'm going to go ahead and say some of this stuff, but it's very slight visual spoiler kind of stuff. But yes, there's some Abu Ghraib stuff. That because this movie is, I think at the end of the day, is about redeeming for the way this soldier treated people during, you know, post 9/11 and the interrogation. This is a terrorism movie. This is a movie about mistreatment.
Not sound like what this is.
That's what I'm saying. The movie is so confused.
If you watch the trailer, you would have no idea what this movie is about. You know what? I take that back. Watching this movie, you would have no idea what this movie's about. You know?
That's the whole point. So anyways,
yeah, it's like
during
he was a guard at like Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib and stuff, like torturing POWs.
So he's trying to redeem for his torturing of these prisoners of war. So anyway, During those scenes, he chooses a lens that is so wide that it starts to warp the edges, like top, bottom, and the side edges, in a way that is like a funhouse mirror. And this is obviously an intentional decision, I think, to show that his memory is, you know, in this time, he's having a memory about this time that is just so messed up in his life that he's like warping it or whatever. But unfortunately for the movie, there is some unintended comedy here. When the characters stand, you know, in the center of the frame, they look like they have tiny short legs and then, you know, huge torsos. And it looks like a funhouse mirror. It's Willem Dafoe and Oscar Isaac having serious conversations looking like they're in a funhouse mirror. Like, it is so, I heard the couple to my right who didn't walk out, I heard them giggling through this interrogation terrorism scene that is supposed to be doing dramatic work, and they're giggling because of how silly the characters look on screen. Like, it's just it's poor choices you know, throughout. And man, I was, after First Reformed, I was like, Schrader's one to watch, both because he tells out there stories in interesting ways, and he has a knack for telling morality stories in a nuanced way, and this is the opposite of that. And it was so frustrating to go, oh, maybe he just got lucky with First Reformed in his later career, but I don't know.
Well, it's like I said, whenever I watched First Reformed, I think the movie is okay, but Ethan Hawke is so good.
He's brilliant in that movie.
He is what elevates that entire movie for me. Now, I understand what Aaron is saying, like, he likes the story and the moral conundrums that Ethan Hawke goes through in that movie, and that is only elevated by his performance. But I don't think the movie itself is all that interesting without Ethan Hawke.
Yeah.
See, and I think that it is. I liked it.
Yeah. Well, but for me, like, watching this movie now, this is what solidifies. I'm like, oh, okay. So without a good performance carrying the movie, then Schrader's movies just are not that great.
So, and Oscar Isaac's, I think Oscar Isaac's a great actor. I think, like, one of his standout performances for me is Inside Llewyn Davis, which I think is a really underrated movie that people need to go back to. But here, I think everybody is handcuffed here. I don't know what he's doing here. They're handcuffed by the story, the material, the, you know, the understanding of what's going on. I knew it wasn't going to be Rounders. I wasn't expecting Rounders. I wasn't expecting somebody who, like, really gets poker and it's a real true poker movie. But I wanted the poker to play a role. Like, the whole point is he's a poker, like, he's choosing to go play poker at tournaments. But it's not the whole point. But you sure are making it? I don't know. It was just, the movie was so confused. I think we're repeating ourselves now, but.
Yeah. It's always interesting whenever, because I don't watch or look at reviews and stuff until after we've done the show. Mm-hmm. So hearing that this was a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes is shocking. Mm-hmm. I expected it to be around maybe 30, maybe 25-ish, somewhere around there.
Oh, it did drop a little. It's 86 now, but still.
Oh, yeah. Still, that's insane.
And certified fresh, right? Like, when I saw it, it had the certified fresh rating. So,
but 34% audience score. So
there you go. That's what I'm saying. I think this is one of those disconnects where we as critics sometime, and I'm guilty of it as well, will watch a movie, fixate on things we're impressed by, which I don't know what that is here, by the way, but that's okay. I get that it can happen. And we forget to experience a movie in the way an audience experiences a movie. And I just don't think this is a good movie experience for most people, especially if you know anything about poker, because you will just be rolling your eyes at some of the stuff that's going on here. So
It's a boring movie.
It is a boring movie experience. There's nothing to connect to in this movie. So, yeah.
I'll say, if there's one thing or one scene in this movie that I can lean on and say, you know what, that was actually really good for both performances. There's a scene where Ty Sheridan and,
Oscar Isaac?
Oscar Isaac, thank you. I don't know why I brain farted right there. I've been saying his name like 15 times. But there's a scene where Ty Sheridan and Oscar Isaac are in his motel room. And it's a really intense scene.
Yes.
And I would go, you know what? That would be the scene I would, you know, put my hat on and go, you know what? That was actually the intensity. Because up until that point, I think it's one of those movies where everybody wants to give a melancholy, monotonic performance. because they don't know what their character is supposed to be or what the intention of the movie is supposed to be. So they hope that that subtlety in their performance and not really showing any kind of emotion will carry the movie until it's supposed to say what it's supposed to say.
Yeah.
But this is one of those movies where it doesn't say it.
No, I'm glad you brought that up.
Because I don't know.
I'm glad you brought that up, Andrew, because that is a scene. There's a speck of promise in that scene for a different movie that I might have enjoyed. But
that scene should have happened like 45 to 50 minutes earlier.
I mean, it's not going to save anything in this movie, but you're not wrong. I wish the movie
probably
had
kept
taken
those other people in the seats.
I wish the movie had taken that scene as seriously as I wanted to. Like the movie didn't take that scene seriously. I mean, it's there for 5 to 10 minutes, and you think it's the most important moment of the movie, and the movie's like, nah, nah. Just like, okay, whatever, movie, you do you.
Yeah.
Anyhow. I hope you love it, Susan. I hope you love it.
I think I will, but this is, like I said, it's very interesting to hear y'all's take on it, because not what I expected going into this.
That's crazy.
Andrew, I was hoping you could tell me what I missed, but we are on the exact same page. Well, if you have seen it.
I hated it.
All right. Glad to have helped.
One scene can't redeem it from getting out of hate.
If you enjoyed The Card Counter, please let us know why. Not in a silly, demeaning way, but seriously, I would like to hear the other side of this. I will probably go read through some of those many positive reviews and see if I can identify with what they're finding. But I haven't done that yet. But I would love to know, because we obviously are in the critical minority, but it does appear in the audience majority on this one. This just kind of seems one of those deep divides between critics and audiences that happen on some movies. And a reminder to me as a movie critic to see movies through the audience's eyes the best that I can, despite my own inclinations sometimes. So, yeah. There you go. That's The Card Counter. Big recommend for me. Definitely want to go see this one. Definitely worth your hard-earned money.
Yeah. I've already bought my second viewing.
Yeah. Yep. Heading there again tonight. Just to sit through this movie. No, that is not true. I do not recommend checking this out. No need. I literally can't think of the person other than like a huge Paul Schrader fan that just digs his style. That's the only person I can think I'd be like, okay, well, go check it out. Other than that, you can miss it, in my opinion. Before we move on to the best ever challenge, just want to thank our SifPop members for hanging out with us and supporting what goes on here at the podcast as well as at the website. We are still doing weekly reviews and best ever challenge articles at SifPop.com. You should check that out. And there's lots of little fun perks if you are a SiftPop member. So go check out patreon.com/SiftPop. One of those perks at a certain level is a weekly bonus podcast. This week we all told our gambling stories and just kind of different times when we have gambled and what happened. So, and I will just say Andrew's story was the best story. So you're definitely going to want to check that one out. Patreon.com/SiftPop. We appreciate you as a SiftPop member. If you've never checked it out, thanks for even just going and looking. That's at patreon.com/SiftPop. All right, the best ever challenge, best ever movies featuring gambling. Let's do this. We'll go number 5 to number 1. Yeah. As always, if you have something ranked higher, you can trump it, and we'll wait to talk about it till its highest ranking. We'll start at number 5. Andrew, what do you got for your number 5 best ever movie featuring gambling?
I'm going to go with a Martin Campbell movie. It's a little known movie called Casino Royale.
Yeah.
Haven't heard of this, it's about this character named James Bond. This was, the beginning of the Daniel Craig era, and it was such an amazing introduction to this new style of Bond. Because coming off of Pierce Brosnan and Roger Moore before him, James Bond was always the debonair, smooth-talking action hero that never got hurt. He was always crisp and clean at the end of every single one of those movies. Mm-hmm. He could have been in like 15 different explosions, but that tuxedo didn't have a scuff on it. you know. This one, Daniel Craig gets the crap beat out of him. It's a much more grounded, realistic, you know. It's you find out it's a lot more entertaining when you find out that your main hero is mortal and that they can be hurt, because the sense of danger and dread is elevated, you know. That's why I don't like Superman, because he can't get hurt. But I think that in this one, you know, Daniel Craig, not only is he physically getting harmed constantly, mentally he's going through a lot of stuff in this movie too. And it's really interesting to see a vulnerable and intimidated in some moments James Bond. Going specifically for the gambling, I think this is like some of the most fun gambling to watch out of any movie on my list, just because the stakes beyond the poker event are so high that the actual gambling itself just elevates that to a new level. I think that Mads Mikkelsen as Le Chiffre is such an amazing, he's like one of my favorite Bond villains. He's so good. Yeah, everybody in this movie is great. Eva Green, Judi Dench, Daniel Craig. It's a great movie. I love it.
Yeah, I think the Daniel Craig era of Bond was very much informed by the Bourne movies. You know,
very much.
You had the Bourne movies started in like 2002, I think. And, you know, by 2006, when this came out, they were like, oh, okay, what if it was a little more, you know, impactful in that way and a little less shiny? And you can almost feel it, you know, trying to be James Bourne, you know, in some of these scenes. But I think it found its own groove as well as kind of the new Bond and the new style. It's not my favorite new Bond, but it's not my least favorite either. So
Skyfall's my favorite new Bond.
Me too.
Oh.
Me too.
Yeah.
Wow.
Susan, what do you got at number five?
Probably going to get trumped, I would imagine. But I will say a lot of these movies, it was a bit of a struggle for me to think of. Because gambling films are my top two are probably the ones that I really, really liked the most.
Yeah.
But Casino.
I actually just have this in honorable mention. I'm not a huge Casino fan. Yeah, I like it, but it's not a huge one for me. So, yeah.
Yeah, honestly, like, and I kind of just threw it in there. I knew it was a good movie. It was so long.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember. It's a long movie. Like, this movie is long. It was good, but it's. Yeah, I mean, honestly, there's not a whole lot to say about it. Like, I thought it was good for what it was, good performances, but I just remember thinking it was really long, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those weird instances where you watch this movie and you're like, okay, so I saw Goodfellas,
mm-hmm.
and it felt so much like Goodfellas.
Yeah,
I'm like, am I watching Goodfellas 2? But no, these.
I believe it's like, proper title is Gooder Fellas. I think Gooder.
The Goodest Fellas is the third movie.
Yeah, it's the third movie.
And I actually think I like Goodfellas more.
I do too. And that's my issue with this movie is like I'm watching and I'm like, it feels so much like Goodfellas, but mm-hmm. Goodfellas is better.
Yeah.
So that's why I just come away from Casino just going, yeah. I mean, they're both Scorsese movies with Pesci and De Niro, and both of those guys are pretty much playing the exact same characters that they played in Goodfellas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a lack of Ray Liotta.
Yeah. Yeah. just needed some Ray in there and everything would be
That's
good.
All it needed.
All right. Let's move on to my number five.
Got
Focus is my number five. I really like this movie.
You're the first person I've ever heard say that.
Really?
I didn't even think of that movie.
There are some Focus fans. There are some Focus fans.
I thought it was okay. It was okay.
And I know a lot of this has to do with I'm in love with Will Smith. Like, his charisma is just, like, sure. I could watch him in anything.
Great.
But I do love some of the clever turns it makes. I love the there's a thing that gambling movies can do where it almost gives their characters a little bit of omniscience. And this movie does that. And that can go either way for some people. But I kind of enjoy it where it's like this person is another level of observational that actually probably isn't humanly possible, but it's interesting. I enjoy it. And of course, we have Margot Robbie in there as well doing mm-hmm. incredible work. So, for the performances, for the fun, I really enjoy Focus. I'd encourage, if you haven't seen it because you didn't hear a lot of good buzz about it, maybe check it out. You might like it. It's really fun.
Yeah.
So that's my number five. Andrew, what is your number four?
Possibly trumped. I'm going to go with Rain Man.
Yeah, I'll trump that one.
I didn't even think. think about that. Oh, I should have put that in my list. I love that movie. Damn.
Yeah, there's a bunch of movies that are subtly about gambling that you forget because you're thinking of movies that are just pure poker.
Rain Man's not about gambling. It's about toothpicks. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Man. That might have been my number one, to be honest. I love that movie so much, but yeah.
So good.
Well, we'll talk about it here in a bit. I do have it a little bit higher than number four. Mm-hmm. So, Susan, what is your number four?
I think mine's going to get trumped now. Rounders.
Yeah, I'm going to trump that one as well. So, all right. I guess that means it's my number four. I love this movie, and this movie continues to climb up my best of all time list. Bad Times at the El Royale is an absolutely incredible movie. And it is, this may be my stretchiest movie in the category, but honestly, the themes of this movie are so much about chance and gambling and roulette wheels and coin flips. And, you know, it takes place at half of a casino. I feel confident putting it in this category and then just, you know, explaining again my love for this incredible film. Drew Goddard is doing some of the most intricate and beautiful visual thematic work in this movie that I've ever seen. It is obvious that every frame is a choice to tell a story, and I love what's going on here. This movie introduced me to Cynthia Erivo, who is just astonishing. Lots of great, great stuff. Great performances going on here. Good stuff. So yeah, Bad Times at the El Royale is my number four.
It's good stuff. I like the movie. I didn't even think about it as a gambling movie, but yeah, it is.
Yeah. Like I said, it's a little stretchy, but I think it works. Andrew, what do you got at number three?
So I accidentally skipped my number four, and I put Rain Man in my number four when it should have been my number three.
Oh, okay.
But this movie's going to get trumped by you anyway. Just Ocean's 11.
Yes. So Trump. I'm definitely trumping that one too. So
yeah.
What about you, Susan? What is your number three?
I said Molly's Game.
Yeah, I like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
And that was another one that was kind of tough, but I thinking back, I did really enjoy the story because I know it's based on a true story. And I think the thing that fascinated me the most was Michael Cera's character is supposed to be based on Tobey Maguire, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah, I think that is what people assume, yes.
The general consensus, yeah.
Right. Wow. What a jerk. Because it really did shake my thought of him. I still, you know, I like
people
I
can change. Like people can change. We can give him a little bit of a chance, but yeah.
But mostly, I am a huge fan of Jessica Chastain. I think she is an incredible actress who should have already won an Oscar by now, if you ask me. And she is a powerhouse in this film, and she's that's really what made me pick this. Is just her performance is incredible, and it's an interesting story.
Yeah, people kind of see it as a lesser Sorkin, but he's so smart and so good. Mm-hmm. I enjoy a lot about this movie. I think it's a little wieldy at times. It tries to do a little too much at times, but I really dig it. I really dig it quite a bit. So, and the poker is good.
It is.
I think it was pretty good poker.
Yeah.
There are only a few actors that I can think of that can pull off what Jessica Chastain does in this movie. And it's a character, whenever you see them walk into a room, they are the ones that command presence and attention. Mm-hmm. You know, whenever the big one that comes to my mind for this is Sean Connery in Hunt for Red October. Whenever he is the one talking, everybody's listening. In this movie, whenever Jessica Chastain walks in, everybody turns their head and looks at her. Not just because she's gorgeous, but because she just has that presence about her that's like, ooh, she is the head honcho. What she says goes in this room. Mm-hmm. And that's really what's fascinating about this movie.
Yeah.
I love it.
There's a power dynamic really good call there. Yeah, that's a good call. It was definitely in my honorable mentions. Yeah. So I'm glad we're talking about it. So that's my number three then. This is where I had Rain Man, which is where it would have landed for you as well, Andrew, if you had done that. So and we'd probably being trumped by Susan if she had thought of it.
If I had thought about it, I think it would have been it would have been one or two. I don't know which place now. Maybe it would have been number two.
How great is this movie? Like
it's insane.
It's really, really good. And you know, there is an uncomfortability in modern movie making that I completely understand as we deal with disabled performances and, you know, those kind of things. But I think there is a sensitive and positive way to do it. And I think Hoffman is doing that here. Mm-hmm. I think Tom Cruise is doing something we don't really see him do much anymore, which is kind of just a straightforward, you know, performance. And he's so good. And he may be, he may have, should have gotten more acting attention for his performance in this movie than Hoffman even did.
Push back on that.
He's incredible in this.
I just think that people hate on Tom Cruise, though. Like, yeah. I think he's such a talented actor. I'm a big fan of Tom Cruise, and they do not give him enough credit in general. Mm-hmm. Like, this is one of his best performances, hands down. I probably agree with Andrew. I think Hoffman is.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But
yeah. I'm just trying to get Tom the Cruise clicks. I'm just trying to get the clicks. I'm just trying to throw a hot take out there. And
you're getting them. There you go. I totally agree that I think that Tom Cruise's performance and his character in this movie mm-hmm. are underappreciated, because being as unlikable as his character is in the beginning, where he's like, oh, you just found out you have a brother who is mentally disabled, but you find out he has savantism. How can I exploit that? Mm-hmm. Is like mm-hmm. something that goes, oh, that doesn't make me feel good. Yeah. But you just like, and you think to yourself, how can somebody come back from such a horrible like mentality? But by the end of this movie, these two together, you just love so much. So great writing, great performances, great movie.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yep. That's Rain Man, my number three. So on to our number twos, I believe. Yep. What do you have at number two, Andrew?
I'm going to go with Snatch.
Yeah, I knew you'd have this pretty high.
Yeah. Oh, God, I love this movie. I'll say this just in case. It might be on somebody else's list, but Lock, Stock was like my number six. So it was really close.
I actually wondered which of these, if Snatch or Lock, Stock would be in your top five. I assumed it would be Snatch, but yeah.
Yeah. Whenever it comes to those two, like these are like some of my favorite Guy Ritchie films. But Snatch, I think that it just has the perfect, you know, charcuterie board of characters. You know, you got
nice
weird Brad Pitt playing this gypsy boxer. And then, of course, you know, just everybody else in this movie is just perfect. Jason Statham is hilarious in this movie. Vinnie Jones, there's so many amazing performances and characters and memorable moments that, for as insanely British as this movie is, like unabashedly, unapologetically British this movie is, it's still not as bad as Lock, Stock. You can still understand what's going on your first go around with Snatch. You might have to watch Lock, Stock a couple of times to fully even just understand not only the thick accents, but actually, you know, the dialect and stuff like that, like the words that they use for an American audience can be a little bit tricky.
Yeah, there's no way I'm watching this movie without subtitles.
Without subtitles, yeah.
Not
especially
a chance.
Especially with Brad Pitt.
Yeah, especially with Brad Pitt. Subtitles,
yeah,
for sure.
Totally.
Yeah. But I think that Snatch from beginning to end is a much more cohesive and entertaining movie, yet I love them both.
All right, what's your number two, Susan?
I picked The Hangover.
Mm-hmm. Good choice.
Nice.
In my honorable mentions.
That was one that I remember when I went into the movie theater to watch, I had the lowest of expectations because I thought this was going to be such a bad movie. I hate the second and third. Mm-hmm. Don't like
them. As you should. They don't as you should.
Aaron's like, good job. Good job.
Yeah. Well done. But well the done. First one is so good. There's like an originality to it that you didn't expect. And it's hilarious. It's just so funny. And normally I don't really like those. You go on a journey and everything mm-hmm. goes wrong until it finally goes right at the end. I think that formula is probably one of the most lazy formulas in my opinion. But it can be if you don't make it original. This one, I think it had a lot of stuff in between it that made it original and so many great one-liners. Although I will say, it makes me cringe thinking of a word that was a quote that Zach Galifianakis
mm-hmm. sure.
says. I don't even want to say it. At the time in college, we said it all the time because it was like, you could, but now I don't think they would say that word anymore.
Yeah. No, it's again, it's another one of those examples of how comedy changes. And, you know, I think it's totally fine for culture and society to mature and understand how certain words, you know, are hurtful just, you know, by being said because of how they've been used against people. And so, yeah, so you go back and watch something and yeah, there's that cringe factor, that not age, you know, not aging well, factor. And comedy is going to be where you see it the most, I think, because comedy is where you push those lines and you push those boundaries and you say shocking things, you know, characters say shocking things to be funny because part there is shock comedy is a thing. And so, yeah, no, I totally understand what you're saying. Yeah. So.
Yeah. But all in all, good story and funny movie.
I haven't watched The Hangover in a while. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that the sequels are so terrible that I think they've impacted my ability to enjoy the original. And so I don't want to watch it. Also, for some of the reasons you mentioned about it not aging well and those kind of things. Yeah. But yeah, so I haven't gone back and revisited it. But I do know when I watched it, even before the sequels, I wasn't like, gung-ho, this movie's amazing. It was more of like, these guys are funny for me. But I did have it in my honorable mentions as one worth mentioning.
Now, I think that, you know, there's comedies that come along like once every like 5 years that I think will define like for a period of time, like this was the comedy of that either that decade or something like that. And I think The Hangover is definitely the one that I would come back to and say for its time, The Hangover was the king. And then like, I would say Step Brothers from modern times. I might even say Game Night is probably the comedy that I would say is like the one that defines. It's not as beloved as these, but I still think it's the best.
Game Night is in my conversation for best comedies ever. I think that movie is astonishing.
I think it's a great movie.
Yeah.
So. I don't know if enough people have watched that one yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's unfortunate.
All right. We're on number twos, right? We're my number two now, and then we'll go to our number ones. This is where I had Rounders at number two. Susan, you had that somewhere as well? You had that at like...
It was my number four.
Number four.
Yeah.
Man, I love the poker in this movie. I love the people in this movie. I love how it's over the top. Brian Koppelman has this real interesting writing energy that he finds for his characters. I see it in Billions as well, which is what he's writing right now, the TV show Billions, where he builds these bigger-than-life characters, but you still somehow just buy into them. And I think Edward Norton's doing a lot of that here. Obviously, John Malkovich is doing that here, you know, larger than life kind of stuff. Pay that man his money. You know, you've just got
his money.
You've just got all this over the top accents. I really dig Rounders. It's not a perfect movie. There are definitely things I think I would take out of it, change a little bit, tighten it up. But man, I love the plot. This is how you do a gambling movie. This is how you tell a story about a world that people may not know and you invite them in. Because when I saw this for the first time, I did not love poker. I had never really played Texas Hold'em. I didn't even know what it was when I saw this movie. And because this predated the Chris Moneymaker effect, right? This predated, which for those of you who don't know, Chris Moneymaker was kind of an everyday guy that won the World Series of Poker and just created this huge poker boom as people were like, oh, I can just pick up this game and win millions of dollars. And well, no, it's not that easy. But but anyhow, this predated that by a little bit. And so this movie was kind of there for all these new poker fans to enjoy. But it brings you into that world in a way that educates you, but then also uses it for the story in such interesting and great ways. Rounders is always going to be one of those movies for me that I know it's not perfect, but man, do I love watching it. It's good stuff.
I think it does poker better than any movie ever.
Yeah.
If we're talking like what movie does gambling, specifically poker, the best, it's probably Rounders. I think that's pretty widely agreed upon, too.
I think Molly's game gives it a run for its money. Molly's game is really great about the poker stuff, but yeah.
That's true. It's also interesting to when you really dig into it, how much of Rounders is based on real people.
Yeah.
Like
in that scene.
Like a KGB. The underground scene, yeah. Yeah, the whole underground scene, apparently. David Harbour, who is from Stranger Things and stuff, apparently he was in that group of people. Like, he knew KGB and all those people and stuff. Like, he played poker with him on the regular when he was in New York. So, yeah, it's interesting once you dive into the real, like, the story surrounding that movie.
So there you go. That's my number two rounder. So time for our number ones, some of which are already known. But Andrew, I don't know that have we heard your number one yet? I don't think we have. What do you got?
We have not. I'm going with lucky number 11.
Okay. All right. There you go.
You know me.
I do know you.
One of my favorite movies ever. I mean, it has an amazing cast. Sir Ben Kingsley, Morgan Freeman, Bruce Willis, Lucy Liu, Josh Hartnett, Stanley Tucci. This movie has everybody you could think of is in this movie.
Mm-hmm. You say Sir Ben Kingsley, but all I see is Trevor. Trevor's in this movie, right?
He's acting like he's Sir Ben Kingsley.
Right, yes, yes. Yeah. Trevor is the real actor. That's what I've decided.
Trevor is the real actor, yeah. No, I absolutely love this movie, and the tie-in for gambling is betting on horse races. Mm-hmm. When I first saw this movie, I don't know if Susan, if you've seen this movie yet. Aaron, you said you barely remember this movie.
I barely remember seeing this movie, yeah. I
haven't seen this.
Yeah. I highly, highly, highly recommend that you both watch it, and Aaron, you revisit it, because it's one of those movies, like, as the movie's unfolding, you begin to care more about these characters than a lot of movies I really can think of. Like, my desire for Josh Hartnett and Lucy Liu to be safe and okay by the end of this movie is so high compared to, like, a lot of movies. Like, the chemistry between those two is like, oh god, please nothing bad happens to them. I love them so much. Everybody's great in this. Everybody. And seeing Morgan Freeman play a villain was interesting, because he's pretty sinister in this one.
Yeah. Very nice. Lucky number 11. Sounds like, Susan, we have the same number one.
Does seem like it. So I don't know how that works. I mean, I'm going to get trumped, but
yeah. Go for it.
Ocean's 11.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one.
Yeah. I think I would still pick Ocean's 11 over Rain Man. I probably would have said Rain Man number two. But I mean, for me, Ocean's 11 is one of my favorite movie theater experiences that I've ever had, because I'd never watched a gambling film like that. That at the time, I mean, I couldn't tell you now, but at the time I was just like, I felt like I understood what was happening with all the gambling. And it's like, there were so many twists and turns, and especially the ending, my jaw was like dropped to the floor. I was like, what?
Yeah.
And of course, if you want to talk, I can't ever really say that word correctly, charcuterie board of actors right there. I like that. That's really good. But what a cast in Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
Now, charcuterie is it usually cheeses, or it's meats and cheeses?
Meats and cheeses, because
that's a great if it's usually cheeses,
a smorgasbord. How's that? Is that better?
No, I was just thinking it's a great one to use, like, if there's a lot of people, like a really cheesy movie or something, you could say like a charcuterie board of performances. But I think it is meats and cheeses as well. So no, you're not wrong. What a cast! The cast is great. The chemistry is great. Everybody's having fun together. You can tell. But like you said, more than anything, this is number one for me for the story structure, the plotting, the way we get there, the expert way that Soderbergh knows how to give you the outline without the pieces, so that he can spring the pieces on you at the end. I think it's the best here. I think it's the best he's ever done here. With this kind of thing.
Easy.
Because you get to the heist and you're like, I kind of know their plan overall, but the details you're missing are so fun to realize in the moments that they're happening. It's brilliant. It's just like endorphin kick after endorphin kick after endorphin kick. And it ends really well.
It takes you on a ride the whole time. It literally feels like a ride.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I very, very fond of this movie. Love Ocean's 11.
I actually think that, not to contradict you, Aaron, but I think that, Soderbergh does such a good job of technically giving you all the pieces to the puzzle as to how the heist is going to unfold, but he does it in a way to where you don't realize like what you're being shown or what's in the background or any of that stuff is actually just as vitally important to, like, if you're not focused, you could technically know how the heist should unfold by like all the stuff you're seeing before it actually takes place. And it's only after you see how the heist comes to fruition that you're like, oh, so that thing in the back, that was, yeah, I should have known. And it's one of those movies that rewards, I guess is a better way to say it, rewards people who are hyper-focused and paying attention to stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, I saw how that one was going to go.
I think,
which was nobody in this one.
I think we're pretty much saying the same thing. You know, there's this expert technique that he does where he presents it to you, but kind of shades it or hides it from you in a way that you get to really truly experience it as it's happening.
Yeah.
And there are some reveals that are more hidden than others. But for the most part, you're not wrong. You know, there's a way, you know, to watch this a second time and go, oh, I didn't see that the first time I watched it. It's, you know, so,
yeah.
I think all that stuff is brilliant.
Have you seen the original one with the Rat Pack?
I actually haven't. No. I've never gone back and watched it. No.
You don't have to. It's not good.
No.
It's one of those rare, like, I will say, I don't know if it's because I saw this modern era, the Soderbergh version, before I saw the old one, but it just seemed like this new one was so clever and like well thought out. And yeah, the Rat Pack's going to have good chemistry, you know, mm-hmm. but they were, it's one of those things, they were singers. They're not actors. Mm-hmm. So the whole chemistry, you know, thing doesn't quite work as well as it does in the modern one. So yeah, it's good. But if you're comparing it to this new one, it's no competition. The modern version, I say modern, when did it come out? 2001? Yeah, 2001 is leagues ahead of the 60s version.
Nice. Well, there you go. There's our best ever gambling movies. Honorable mentions. I have a couple. Susan, did you have any honorable mentions?
I'll just say Rain Man because I forgot it.
Yeah, sure. Andrew, did you have any?
Just one that we haven't mentioned. I'll go with Uncut Gems.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good that somebody mentioned that. I didn't really enjoy that movie.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, we got a whole spectrum here. Me loving it. Aaron thinks it's okay. And Susan hates it.
I would say I'm more.
Restful experiences in my life.
I don't remember what I went with when we reviewed that. We may actually have missed a full review on that movie. I don't remember. But,
no, we did. It was one of those weeks where.
Yeah, you know, all the award stuff is coming out, and we're doing two movies a week. But yeah, I would probably be firmly in the didn't liked it camp, but not hated it. I understand what there is to appreciate about that movie. It just doesn't work for me. Anyhow, I would also mention Ocean's 8 is better than I think people give it credit for. I understand all the complaints with it, but there are certainly some enjoyable things there. The movie 21 is actually pretty good. If you haven't seen it, it's been so long.
I saw it when it came out in theaters and I haven't seen it since.
I think it's all right. And then a couple I wanted to mention because they are related. California Split is a 70s movie that is really kind of...
What's his name?
Sure, go ahead. You can get there.
Nope, I'm going to have to look it up.
California Split is a movie about gambling in like really deep and interesting ways. It's Elliot Gould and George Segal. So this is a movie about gambling and kind of what it does to you and two friends as they experience a journey of going through gambling. I would recommend this one. It's really interesting. It's definitely a 70s movie in many, many ways. I think it was 74 when it came out. But then I would also mention Mississippi Grind. If you haven't seen Mississippi Grind, it is basically California Split. It's basically a remake of California Split with Ryan Reynolds and Ben Mendelsohn as the key roles. And maybe one of Ryan Reynolds' best like actor performances. So if you haven't had a chance to check out Mississippi Grind, you definitely should check that out. Plus, I love Ben Mendelsohn. I think he's pretty incredible too. So,
Color of Money.
Yeah, you know, we didn't mention some of those, and honestly, those movies fall firmly in the category of maybe I've seen, but it's been so long. Like, they're on my catch-up list. Like, I'm getting to those, you know, movies like The Hustler, I think, is one of them.
Yeah, Color I haven't of Money. Seen The Hustler, but I've seen The Color of Money, so, I guess I'm going to watch them out of order.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's move on to our buried treasure for this week. What is that one thing in any area of pop culture you want to make sure people know about? Susan, you are our guest, so you will go last. I'll go ahead and kick us off. We are recording this on the 20th anniversary of 9/11. So it was 20 years ago today that the two towers were hit. And I watched the 6-episode docuseries on Hulu called 9/11 One Day in America. And boy, oh boy, is this amazing. It's hard to watch. Of course, it's going to be hard to watch knowing what happened that day and all of the stories. It's also so inspiring to watch. It really does take that day from, you know, the morning. It starts at like 6 a.m. that morning in New York City and shows actual footage throughout the day and kind of forms it into a storytelling documentary about different stories of people who were in the buildings, first responders, all those kind of things. And what is most amazing about this documentary to me is you feel like if you lived through that, you know, 20 years ago, for me, I was out of college for a few years. I was, you know, definitely sprinting into my adult years. And so I have huge recollections of this. And yet I watch this and I'm like, I have never seen 90% of this footage. It presents it in a way from the, I think they worked in, it was National Geographic, worked in coordination with the 9/11 Museum. And they have so much material that they can use that they are really telling coherent and cohesive stories from that day with actual footage and interviews from the people that were there. This is a huge recommend for me just to understand that day, how it unfolded and what it meant in the consciousness of this country is really valuable to understand so much of what has happened since then, you know, kind of how you know, this day has been used in many different ways, for good and for ill. But this is not the documentary that's talking about that. This is the documentary that's telling you what happened on that day. And I think everyone will find this insightful, beautiful, terrifying, traumatic, all those things. But it is worth your time. I'm telling you, these 6 episodes are worth your time to fire up on Hulu and live through that day and kind of what it meant. Because I really do think the inspiring outweighs the traumatic in many ways, at least as it's presented here. So anyhow, 9/11, One Day in America is on Hulu if you want to check that out. Andrew, what about you? What do you got?
I knocked a movie off of my
list of shame.
Yeah. Only the War Games.
Oh, okay.
Matthew Broderick movie.
Now, talk a little bit, because you told me a little bit about what you're doing with our buried treasure. I really like this. You're starting.
Yeah, I don't know if. Let me check.
You're starting.
I was going to start next week.
Okay. So.
Yes, War Games came out in 83. I was 3 years from being born.
All right.
Born.
But starting next week, Andrew is going to, for his buried treasure, knock off a list of shame movie from each year of his life. So he'll start with the year he was born and then kind of go through each year. So that'll be fun.
86 all the way up. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this was just one just to get me, you know, a little taste off of the cheese on the charcuterie board, as it were. I'd known all of the, you know, the pop cultural references that this movie makes, you know, Shall We Play a Game, The Whopper, Tic-Tac-Toe, stuff like that. Like, I knew all of those things, but having a full understanding of what this movie is saying and what this movie was saying at the time is incredible. This movie, I don't know when the last time you saw it, Aaron.
It's been a while. It's probably been since the early 90s, since I've revisited this.
I don't know if you remember how this movie starts, with the two guys in the nuclear bunker, and they have to follow the protocol, you know, to, you know, arm the nuke, and one of them has to point a gun at the other one saying, "You have to follow orders, you have to follow orders." And I'm like, this is how this movie's starting? This is not the movie that I expected. I expected it to be Matthew Broderick accidentally hacks into a computer, and it's a sentient computer that, you know, wants to, you know, play games of war. What I got was something completely different, which had much larger ramifications. And then it all culminates in the whole, in the, it's an interesting game. The only way to win is to not play at all. And this movie says so much more than I ever expected it to. I am pleasantly surprised with how great this movie was. And I am so glad that I watched it. Plus, good. Ally Sheedy is, everybody's got to love Ally Sheedy.
Yeah,
so. I do. I do love her.
Yep. Yeah. If you don't have a crush on Ally Sheedy, I don't know what's wrong with you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, yep, there we go.
Yeah, War Games. I remember, my memory is that this movie is often silly, like with its understanding of AI and different things. Like there's some silliness to this. But at the end of the day, it is saying something big and important and, you know, finds an interesting and compelling way to do it. So, I should revisit War Games. I really should, because it has been a long time since I've seen it, for sure. That brings us to you, Susan. What is your buried treasure?
Well, I don't know if you guys have already watched this series, and I mean, it does pretty well on Netflix, but one of my favorite shows on Netflix is Mindy Kaling's Never Have I Ever.
I've never watched it, no.
Oh my God, it's so good.
I love Mindy Kaling, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, she wrote in it. I don't know how much it's based on her own kind of childhood, or the character, the main character is supposed to be somewhat based on Mindy Kaling and like her personality and how she was during high school. But Mindy Kaling has expressed before that she's a big rom-com fan. That's my favorite genre of film. And this is like one long romantic comedy in a way, like set in high school. Seasons 1 and 2 are out on Netflix. I think they are both incredible. I also just in general, it's, for me personally, it's really nice to see a woman of color be the lead and kind of go through the same things that I thought when I was growing up in high school. And I didn't have women that looked like me to see them on screen like that. I watched She's All That and then 10 Things I Hate About You and Never Been Kissed, all those movies. It was just nothing wrong with it, but it was just white women that I had to identify with. And so it's really, it hits me a lot differently watching this series.
Yeah.
And it's one that I can rewatch. It can be very cheesy at times, but deep down, it's got a lot of actually pretty good emotional depth there and great relationships, mother-daughter relationship, female empowerment, and really good love stories too.
So it is on Netflix?
Yes.
And what season? What season are they going into?
Well, they just finished season 2 and they just announced that there will be a season 3. So I'm really excited, which they need it. Oh my God. This story is not done yet. Like they could go, I think they could go at least 4 seasons.
Okay.
I don't know that I even heard of this. So this was completely, completely off my radar. Now I'm not someone who, I don't go to Netflix to surf. Like I go there to watch a specific thing and then I go away. So I'm not much of a surfer. So like stuff like this doesn't like show up for me until somebody mentions it, but.
It's been like number one on Netflix a few times, but I mean, it may not, I mean, are you guys like rom-com fans though?
I am. I enjoy a good rom-com. I like them. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I don't, you know, I it's again, like, I don't even know what's number one on Netflix. Like, I don't see that list. I just go, you know, if the movie I'm looking for isn't there, I search for the movie I'm looking for and go watch. Like, I just, I try not to.
You don't search like a genre. Or
I try not to let algorithms run my life because they will.
You don't listen to what they recommend for you. You're like, no.
I'm just like the algorithms will try to
run
my life.
Defiant.
I am defiant.
But whenever somebody does recommend a show, I always check it out. So I just added it to my list.
Well, good. I hope you like it.
So, yeah, me too.
Next time you're on, I'll have to let you know what I thought.
Please do.
Well, that is Never Have I Ever on Netflix. A couple seasons there for you. War Games, which I just looked up. You can stream on Tubi or Canopy if you have those.
I watched it on YouTube for free.
Well, there you go.
I don't know if you had to be a YouTube like premium member, like for their like free movies and stuff like that. But that's how I watched it.
Okay, so Andrew found it for free on YouTube. And 9/11 One Day in America is on Hulu. 6 episodes.
Yeah.
Well, we did it, guys. We did a podcast. We set out to cast some pods, and they have been casted so expertly that we all deserve a pat on the back. Thank you so much for joining us today. SifPop is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you.
Thanks to Drew for putting together some visuals, some art for the show.
Woo!
And thank you to Susan Kamyab Stevens for hanging out with us again. Yeah. It is always great to have you on the show. Again, tell people where they can find you and your amazing work.
Well, thank you. ThisChicksFlix.com, on Twitter at ThisChicksFlix, and ICTN.tv, or like I said, you can Google me and find me.
So ThisChicksFlix.com, both chicks and flicks end in an X. So yeah. ThisChicksFlix.com if you want to check out more of Susan's stuff. Thank you to our SifPop members for giving monthly to make SifPop a real thing. Support starts at $3 a month, and you can find out the different levels of access, including levels that have bonus episodes every week and some that have monthly video hangouts, all sorts of fun stuff going on there. You can find out more at patreon.com/SifPop. Lots of ways to connect with us. Feel free to leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts, or email us at feedback@SifPop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like it too, so let them know about it and that listening is much easier than doing, well, anything with severe radiation poisoning. We will be back next week with The Eyes of Tammy Faye, probably, and Cry Macho are probably the two movies for next week, and we will see you then.
That's a Clint Eastwood, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.